Hey everyone, this podcast is part of Story Mode, the podcast network of Gamefully Unemployed. You can support us and gain access to other great exclusive podcasts at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's patreon.com/GAMEFULLY unemployed, which is spelled like it sounds.
There can be only one.
Let yourself feel the stack. Talk.
Oh, it hurts.
Yeah, I got it. I got it out. All right.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Hi, everybody.
Here we are. Born to be kings. We're the princes of the universe.
That was beautiful, Tom.
Thank you.
Guys, welcome. Welcome to the second episode of Princes of the Universe.
Oh, shit.
One of your hosts, David Bell.
I'm the second host, Tom Ryman, yeah. Paradoxically, because there can be only one.
That's true. Well, that's the final episode. We'll fight it out.
Yeah, the last episode, we'll fight to the death.
Yeah. Guys, this is a Patreon-mandated episode. This was, I want to thank our producer, the person who's making us watch all the Highlander movies, James Rainey. Guys, that's what this is about. We are currently watching all the Highlander movies and just kind of giving our thoughts and breaking it down and trying to figure out what the hell is the deal.
What the hell this series is. Now, as we discussed in the last episode, I was a fan of the original Highlander, only saw Highlander 2 a few times, and then the rest of the movies I'm not really into. So this is going to be a journey.
Yep.
For us, for the rest of this series.
Yes, this is a hell of a journey, and we're starting with, you know, we're on episode 2, and that means Highlander 2, The Quickening.
The Quickening.
I believe we watched the Renegade version.
Because it's the only one available. We have to talk about how hard it is to watch this movie.
This is not streaming online.
Nowhere! There's like a Czechoslovakian dub of it on YouTube, and that's it.
Yep, and so the next task was getting a copy on Blu-ray. I don't think we found a copy on Blu-ray, did we?
Nope.
Instead, we found it included in a DVD box set of the Highlander films. The DVD box set has one DVD that's all of the Highlander films except for two, which is in a separate DVD. something happened around this movie. A lot of things happened around this movie, actually.
We're going to get into that.
This movie is, I think, a famous disaster.
It's infamous, yeah. This is a well-known fucking calamity. This is this catastrophe of a film.
Yeah, it is.
Like, I think they were filming in a country that went bankrupt filming.
We'll get to that. I have watched the Making of Highlander documentary, which, spoilers, is titled Seduced by Argentina. So
I saw that.
That gives you a good idea where it's heading. It's a documentary of basically the filmmakers throwing a country under the bus, which I don't entirely agree with, but we'll get to it. Let's start with our first section, though, which we don't remember the order we went in last time. And like, I know we could easily check, but we didn't. So we're going in the order that makes the most sense, starting with Whatlander.
Yes, Whatlander.
Whatlander is when we give a brief description of the film, or not so brief, depending on our understanding of it.
Yeah. I want to say up top that the Wikipedia plot summary for this film is exhaustively detailed,
right,
leading up until when the action finally happens.
That's weird. The IMDb summary is written sarcastically. It's written like, and then this happens for some reason, and despite this shitting on the first movie, they do this instead. And it's stuff like that where it's like, oh, this person clearly hated this movie.
Yeah.
But, so, Tom, yeah, you said you watched this a few times, right?
I've seen this a handful of times, yeah. I actually had this, the Renegade Edition, on a special VHS letterbox edition of it.
Yeah, this is the first time I've watched this.
But that was like 20 years ago.
Right.
And I don't know where that VHS is. I probably jettisoned it into the sun like a sane human being.
Yeah, okay. I guess first question, before we describe the plot, did you like this movie?
No, this is one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Okay. I would argue that I enjoyed this movie because of how bad it is. It's on the border of so bad it's good, where there's certain scenes where you're like, what the fuck? and you have to sit there and try to figure it out.
There are some delightfully bonkers scenes, but a lot of the movie is just real boring.
Yes, that's the problem. There's some boring shit as well. This film is about... Okay. So it's the year 2024. So,
yeah, 5 years from now.
Yep, industrial pollution has destroyed the ozone layer. And now there is a dome over
it's
the
a
world.
Shield, yeah.
A shield. Yep. Shielding us
the
from the
shield
ozone
corporation.
From the sun.
Yeah. From the sun's harmful UV rays.
Right. Run by the corporation. They just call it the corporation a lot.
It's the Shield Corporation. Right. But yeah, they do call it the corporation a lot. Like, not much more thought went into their official name, the Shield Corporation.
And from there, I'm pretty lost. Apparently, Connor McLeod...
I can take it if you're lost.
Christopher Lambert is the creator of the Shield, right?
Yes, he teamed up with this other scientist to make the Shield, which, okay... Why is he suddenly a scientist?
Let's save it for Wylander. So, Connor McLeod, scientist, famous scientist from the first one.
We're skipping over one of the more baffling aspects of the film.
Okay.
Which is that before we learn all of that, and before we learn that he was like the guy that helped build the shield, we learn that all the Highlanders are actually aliens from a planet called Zeist.
Yes. Did we watch the Zeist version? It was hard to tell, because the Renegade version supposedly cuts out the Zeist stuff, but
it didn't on my DVD.
That's what I was going to say. The version I watched, I had the note, wait, they're fucking aliens? Like,
yeah.
And this is, again, according to like Wikipedia, they're like the Renegade version toned down the alien stuff. And it's like, well, not enough.
Not enough. It's still there. Like, the theatrical version cut it out completely.
Got it.
Which I think is the right call.
Yeah, and we'll get to why that happened.
But yeah, so they're aliens from a planet called Zeist. Ramirez, Sean Connery, and Connor McLeod are the leaders of this rebellion that gets crushed by the villainous General Katana, who is Michael Ironside. What are the odds the bad guy would be named after a sword?
Right.
But so rather than just kill them, he takes them to his inner circle of magicians, I guess, who sentence them to be exiled to Earth, where they will live forever.
Yeah, they're like a couple of Zods. Okay, so also they seem to establish that Connery meets McLeod in this. Like, the first time he's, like, talking in front of all those people who look like they're Indiana Jones hiding from the Nazis. They're all white dudes with turbans. And, like, he singles out McLeod and he, like, magically knights him. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, he's one of great destiny.
Yeah. And so was that supposed to be them summing up the first movie and making it take place on another planet? I guess this is in... All right, I'm just going to say this now. The Whatlander and Wylander are going to blend. As we go through this I'm not sure what's happening.
I don't think subsequent sequels or the Highlander TV series acknowledge the alien stuff as canon.
Got it.
But is this trying to rewrite the first one? Partially.
Okay.
This is trying to explain why the immortals exist. And how they got there, even though it doesn't explain all of the other immortals that they inflicted. Right. Did the Kurgan come from Planet Zeist? Was he also a rebel that was exiled?
Right. And just since we're bleeding into Wylander, the immortals, this is kind of a question about the first one. It occurred to me, they're all killing each other. And the prize, along with like all the knowledge of the universe, it's the right to be mortal, right?
Yes.
So isn't it just everybody wins? Because they just all, they're fighting, they're killing each other for the right to die, which they're doing and
have,
just fine.
Have all the world's knowledge. This movie retcons that and makes it kind of dumb and not make sense. Because this movie is like, the prize is you either get to die or you can return to Zeist.
Got it.
So it's like, okay, so you put all these exiles on Earth where they live for thousands of years. And if they kill every single one of every last one of the other exiles, they can either die or go back to the planet where they're a war criminal. Got it. Total sense. Makes total sense.
Yeah. It's all coming together.
This movie, I think, like I said, I think the other movies don't acknowledge.
No, it's its own DVD disc set to the side.
Like, they wouldn't let it into the DVD with the rest of the movies. Like, no, Highlander 2, you can stay outside.
Right. Okay, so that happened a while ago, right? McCloud being
that
Zodded.
Happened before the first movie.
Got it. Got it. Oh, my God. That makes no sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense because Ramirez has been alive for thousands of years when he meets Connor. Connor just learned that he was immortal.
Here's the only way that makes sense is if their memories were wiped when they came to Earth.
But it still doesn't make sense because Ramirez has still lived for over 1,000 years when he meets Connor, and Connor has only lived within a single lifespan. So they, even though they were both exiled at the same time, they appeared on Earth thousands of years apart.
So they're timeless.
Doesn't make any sense.
They can, like, choose a time to appear.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Although, there is a scene where when Michael Ironside calls his goons to go down to the planet to kill Connor McCloud, he does say, go to the future.
Yeah, he does
Which
say
is one
that.
Of my favorite lines in the film. It's like, excuse me, what? Go to the future? Oh, are you looking God. Into the future?
Apparently.
How does time work on Zeist?
I don't think it does. I don't think there's time. I think they're timeless. Okay. So on his time at Earth, he's the Highlander. He's the Highlander. The rest of them are immortals.
He's the Highlander.
So he becomes old. He has Bram Stoker Dracula makeup.
He's so old. So old, bro.
So Connor McCloud is now an old man, having sort of been like kind of disgraced because he invented the shield, but everybody hates him for it.
Because it's kind of keeping, he saved the planet, but at the same time, like, the S.H.I.E.L.D. Corporation has become, like, this autocratic overlord because they control the S.H.I.E.L.D. So, it's like, in order to save the planet, he inadvertently created a monster.
Right. So now he's living in, like, a Blade Runner film noir universe.
He's just living in Blade Runner, watching the fucking opera.
Yeah, watching those futuristic operas where the voice doesn't match the lips of the singer.
Sure doesn't.
Did you notice that? That seems like that's an easy thing to fix, but sure. Sure, we'll just dub the opera singer. He goes home, enjoys a nice scenic view of a rape on the street, does nothing. Our hero doesn't stop a sexual assault in like the first 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm trying to remember. He goes to a bar. He gets attacked by a lady.
Almost gets mugged, but the guys back off when they learn he's McCloud, it seems like he could have stopped that assault just by showing his face if he's that famous where people see him and they're like, shit, we don't want a piece of you even though you're 1,000 years old.
Right. So is he's like a famous immortal because he's like the only immortal. And like, when did that happen?
It's unclear.
All right,
I don't think people know he's immortal. They just know that he's this very famous guy that helped build the shield, which doesn't explain why those thugs are scared of him.
Yeah, it also doesn't explain why he's old, because if he's immortal...
He's not.
Oh, right. He got mortal again. Mm-hmm. Got it.
He becomes...
We're getting to it.
we're gonna get to that, which I love. This wrinkle in the plot is so dumb that several different characters pointed out to Michael Ironside, but we're gonna get to that in a second. So he goes to a bar.
Yep.
Gets yelled at by some lady who's like, fuck you, you made us all prisoners of this corporation. That lady was
they try to kick her out and she comes back for more.
She hits him with a bottle. Oh my gosh. And then he goes outside and Virginia Madsen shows up and she's an eco-terrorist, basically.
Yeah.
Like she's been running she's a former SHIELD Corporation employee that's trying that believes that the ozone layer has repaired itself, which the SHIELD Corporation is keeping a secret because they want to still rule the world and make all the money.
Yeah, for the record, the heroes of this movie are climate, like, change, global warming deniers. Like, it's the evil,
sort of.
It's the evil company making us believe in global warming. I mean, I know it's already happened.
Yes.
But it's that's essentially it. It's an evil company keeping us under their power using the myth of global warming.
Kinda. You got to do a little bit of gymnastics to get there, but that's kind of what it is, yeah. So he gets out onto the street. Virginia Madsen shows up, wants him to help, but he's old and doesn't give a shit. And he's like, "I don't like terrorists."
Yeah.
And then Michael Ironside is on Zeist, and he's talking to his three magicians, and
yeah, they're like porcupine friends.
Yeah, this okay. What sets the plot in motion is truly baffling. Like, they are like, "Well, your Connor's still alive. Looks like he didn't make the choice." Like Michael Ironside thought when he won, he would have chose to come back to Zeist, but he didn't. So he's like, "Ah, fuck it. I'm gonna send some guys down there to kill him."
Unrelated to the SHIELD stuff, right?
No, he's on Zeist. What the fuck does he care about the SHIELD over Earth?
It just, the SHIELD gets involved somehow.
It does, yes. So he goes and talks to his two porcupine guys, and the first thing out of his porcupine twin's mouth is, "Well, if we just, he's gonna die soon. We just wait.
Yeah.
We just wait. He's really, really old. We just wait."
And he's like, why would you bring that up?
Yeah.
There's no movie.
Michael Ironside basically says, "I don't care. Go down there and kill him." They're like, "All right." So the porcupine twins go down there and kill him, to try to kill him. Connor gets into a very old guy fight with them and somehow manages to decapitate them both in very Wile E. Coyote
ways. With like a train?
One gets his head cut off by a train, and he pulls this like electric wire in front of this other guy, which for some reason rips his head off when he goes rocket packing through
the
it.
The wire, I looked at this, it hits the guy in like the chin.
Mm-hmm.
It clearly didn't hit him in the neck, but then his neck just falls over like a mannequin's. Like it doesn't work.
No.
We haven't mentioned that they're on floating boots this whole time.
One of them's on floating boots. The other guy has like a winged jetpack.
Has like wings like Batman and Robin, like Mr. Freeze's wings.
Yeah.
It's very bad.
At one point, Connor jumps on the hover boots.
Yes. That's when I was like, "Oh, right. Fuck yeah. We're going. We're going for it."
What is this movie?
The Porcupine Twins. First of all, Christopher Lambert, his voice, his old man voice, is the voice of a young man doing an old man voice.
It's the funniest decision.
It's the Winona Ryder, Edward Scissorhands voice.
Yeah.
Long ago.
The Porcupine Twins, there's some heavy Wachowski feel in this, because there's two twins with crazy hair who then get on rocket boots, and like, this is all the Wachowskis put together. So the twins are wearing goggles with like a fake nose, like a black nose on it. I don't know why. They look like Batman villains. Yeah, and they just start, they start flying around, and it just really doesn't work as an action sequence.
No, it's very floaty and dull.
It's the look of two guys attached to wires being dragged around.
Being very carefully dragged around.
Yeah.
And then when he kills both the twins, he absorbs their quickening, and he's young again, and now he's immortal again.
For some reason.
And then, so like later on, when Ironside confronts him in the church. Oh yeah, what?
No, he gets hit with the tanker truck with sexy lips on it. Notice that? What is that tanker hauling? Is it hauling sex? What is in there?
It's hauling highly combustible sex.
Yeah.
Just liquid sex.
It's the little things in this movie that really baffle me.
But yeah, so later on, when they're at his wife's grave, Michael Ironside confronts him, and then Christopher Lambert straight up tells him again. He's like, "Look, I was accepted mortality, and I was like welcoming my impending death, and then you came back, and then these guys made me immortal again.
Yeah, so now I'm so going to have to defeat you.
Well, I love that like a few different characters tell Michael Ironside that his plan is stupid and doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It's like, 100%. He wanted to die. He wanted to die. Yeah. Just let him die.
What the fuck are you
Wait
doing?
Like a year. He'll be fucking dead. He'll die on the toilet.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
So just a couple more highlights in the RoboCop 3 wing flying around scene. I love that they have a food stand employee passively watching them fly in circles, and he has no expression on his face. Like, he's like representing the audience where he's just looking like, this is fucking dumb. One of the Porcupine twins passively blows up a hobo.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, he just flies by a hobo and just blows him up. The hobo says, "Hey, pal, you got a light?" And then he blows him up.
Yep.
It's
comedy.
It's a hell of a scene. But yeah, none of it makes sense. None of Michael Ironside's plan makes sense. You could, the best explanation is he's just extremely unhinged.
Yeah, it's really strange. It's just, I don't know.
But yeah, that's sort of the inciting incident.
Oh, right. And then when Virginia Madsen sees that Christopher Lambert is all young again, they fuck right there in the alley.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about this at great length. We for the record, Sean Connery shows up before this, but let's just get straight to the fucking.
Right.
Because they have known each other for 15 minutes. They get into
an
alleyway.
And for 14 of those minutes, he was a really old man.
Yes. Like, she sees he's young. They go into an alleyway. It's like a crime alleyway. It's like where Batman's parents were shot.
Oh, no, for sure. Like, the theater he walked out of was the theater that Batman's parents walked out of when the night they were shot to death.
Christopher Lambert, he grabs her, starts, like, kind of choking her, and she's 100% into it. This stranger who was an old man seconds ago is now choking her in an alleyway, and she's like, oh, I love this.
Right.
She introduces herself.
From her, right. I just want to say, from her standpoint, he is a warlock.
Yes. This is her fetish, apparently. She was like, this is my chance. She introduces herself, and not 5 seconds later, he has penetrated her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, unprotected. There's no condoms.
Well, we know Highlanders can't have children, but.
Oh, he's like, oh, I'm immortal again. I can do this.
She doesn't know that, though. Right, he's been alive for centuries. He could be carrying around just suitcase loads of STDs.
Right.
Like, he doesn't
but
know.
But again, she doesn't know any of this.
No,
and they just start raw-dogging in this shitty alleyway like a couple of junkies. And it's just like, she's so into it. Everybody's so into it. It is the single craziest scene in this movie. As I had to like stop and look up the synopsis because I was like, wait, did they establish that they know each other? And and the synopsis on IMDb says, despite them never having met each other until now, they have passionate sex in an alleyway. And it was like, okay, I didn't miss a thing. That is a hell of a fucking scene.
I was saying this to you before we started recording, but this movie is just a kaleidoscope of bold decisions.
Yes.
And that is chief among them.
Yeah, that was the boldest of the decisions. I don't know why it never played into the movie.
More bold than putting them on a different planet as aliens. Yeah.
They never needed a romantic subplot between them. It was unnecessary. It doesn't play into the main story.
Not really, no.
But they were just like, you know what? They should raw dog right here in this alley.
They should fuck.
Yeah. Why not?
Fuck that immortal guy.
Why not?
Yeah. Fuck that demigod.
Yeah. It was so fucking weird. So Sean Connery teleports into a Shakespeare performance.
He teleports into the middle of a Shakespeare in the Park performance in Scotland, and for some reason doesn't understand what a play is.
Yep. He doesn't understand a lot of things. He like, starts bullying the performer, and the audience is into it.
How could he not know what theater is? Like,
he was like this refined
dude.
Doesn't he not know
dude.
What statues are later or something, or sculptures?
He was confused by the modern art aspect.
Oh, that
of
makes
it.
Sense. Yeah. That's a fun bit.
He was
sort
like, sculpture.
He clearly understands that That's the thing. It's like, I get the idea when he's like, oh, a long way from horse and buggies. Or he's like, yeah, I get it. I'm fucking immortal. I'm not going to understand the world right away. But theater, it's not. Okay, here's the thing. It's not that he doesn't understand theater. It's that he doesn't notice that he's in a theater play for way too long.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, he starts talking to the Shakespeare guy and doesn't notice the giant crowd of people who are totally cool with the fact that he just showed up via lightning.
He lightninged in there.
Yeah. Then he like tells the guy, says, gives him crap about being gay or something.
Yeah, it's when the guy gives the line about Yorick, like, those right. lips, how many times I kissed them countlessly or whatever, and then Sean Connery's like, whatever feelings you had for this fellow while he was alive, it's none of my affair.
Right.
It's like, then why'd you say anything?
Right. I guess he was trying to be woke. That's as woke as Sean Connery's going to get.
That is approximately as woke as Sean Connery gets.
Yeah. Then he takes the guy's sword, which I assume is fake.
It has to be. If it's not, this...
yeah. This. And then he leaves this beautiful theater, right? It's like a big outdoor theater.
Yeah.
And then they show him coming out the front, and it looks like a porn theater. It says Theater Hotel on a neon sign in like a grimy street. It was like, where is this?
I think it's supposed to be in Scotland.
Yeah, it says Scotland. But I just mean, like, where is this in a city? It's just very, it's a very strange transition of two sets to me.
Yes.
And yeah, and that's how Sean Connery becomes a part of this movie.
Yep. He just lightnings, because Sean Connery apparently is a wizard in this, which yep. is not something that was ever established in the previous movies. Like, he yeah. can just do magic now.
Yeah. Then we get the, well, I think we get choke sex after that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get the best scene of the movie, which I would watch, I think, for a whole movie, which is Sean Connery picking out a suit.
Yeah. Yes.
With a single earring he pays. Oh, his finances are questionable. He gives the suit guy a single earring, and they're like, hey, I bet this is worth something. We're not going to check. Let's have a suit montage. And then they do.
He could have just got that from Claire's. You have no idea where that earring uh-huh. came from.
Yeah, that guy doesn't know he's from the past. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't know anything about him. And that apparently is enough to get him a flight on a 50s prop plane in the year 2024.
Yeah, with the safety safety video that, I mean, it's intentionally this way, but like, for some reason the safety video is
halfway
just,
through the flight.
Yeah, and it's just broad comedy.
Yep,
like it's showing people screaming and the plane crashing at the side of a mountain.
Yep, he does a whole bit on that plane.
Yeah,
That woman he's with, I guess she married the producer later or something like that. I was watching the making of, and a happy marriage came out of this movie, so you got to give it that. He got the sword through security again in 2024.
They just don't give a shit anymore.
No, they don't give a shit. The transportation in general in this is it doesn't quite make sense, because we also have subway trains that can go up to 600 miles per hour.
I think he tops out at like 800.
Okay, yeah. And so much that he kills everybody.
Yeah, he goes so fast that everyone on the train dies, and that's before he crashes it.
Right. This isn't Sean Connery, by the way. This is Michael Ironside.
Michael Ironside meteors in from planet Zeist yeah. into a subway car, and then just decides to kill everyone in the subway car driving at 800 miles an hour.
The movie goes out of its way to let us know that there are children and babies on board.
Yeah.
And then they show the baby in the carriage just flying down the subway car, and then everybody just slamming into the back and exploding blood, while Michael Ironside just makes crazy fucking faces with his long hair wig.
There's
going
so much,
like 800 miles per hour.
There are so many long hair wigs in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like all three of the principal male actors are wearing these bodacious hair wigs.
Right. So... that's where we're at in the plot. Also, I want to point out the psychic cook show that I think Sean Connery watches on the plane.
I think so.
I would watch that for hours.
Well,
the psychic
yeah.
cook. Shit.
Yeah, what I don't even
I'm trying to remember.
Like they reunite.
Okay.
Yeah, Connery shows up. They reunite.
They have a celebratory friendship sword fighting reunion.
Yes.
That woman lives on a stage. Like, he's now shacking up with that lady who, it's not just her. No, did you notice no one turns on lights in this movie?
Yeah.
Everybody lives in the dark.
And also, every location is like a gigantic open room.
Yeah.
Like the bar didn't have any walls.
Yeah. I think it's supposed to be kind of dystopian.
It's like a minimalist Shakespeare play.
The idea is they don't have enough power or something. I don't know.
Maybe.
So they reunite.
Yes.
And again, to mirror, because it's like poetry, Tom. Because while Sean Connery shows up, has his reunion, Michael Ironside shows up and goes to his place, which is the corporation, which is also dark.
Well, no, wait. A very important. Okay, we got to kind of move through the rest of this quickly, but
we don't have to.
Well, we don't have to, but like a very important thing happens in between that, in between Connery showing up and Ironside going to the Shield Corporation that I really need to highlight, and that's they fight. Ironside and Connor fight in a factory, and Michael Ironside beats him.
I forgot about that. Yeah,
but doesn't kill him.
Right.
The scene just ends. It's like
apparently there's a version of this movie where they cut those two fights together and it was like really confusing. And I think they did it for the reason you're pointing out.
Right. It doesn't make any sense because it's like they fight. He fucking thoroughly fucks Connor up. His back is broken and shit. And he's like standing over him doing his Michael Ironside laugh. And then it cuts to Connor just walking into Virginia Madsen's apartment.
Just like, sup.
Like,
I lost
the
a fight.
What just happened?
Yeah.
And then like Michael Ironside going to the Shield Corporation. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's so fucking weird. The corporation doesn't have security, but they just have like random guys who can stand up and shoot. He chokes a guy. Michael Ironside chokes one of the businessmen. Mm-hmm. This is like a board meeting. And no one flinches. And then like John C. McKinley, who is in this movie.
He sure is.
That was shocking. I didn't know his career. I didn't know he had roles like this.
Oh yeah, starting out, he was in small roles. Like, I mean, you remember?
Well, I thought this was a bigger role. That's what I mean. Like, I remember him in like Seven, where it's like, oh, he has a few lines. This is like a major character.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, I was happy to see him.
Mm-hmm.
But then he's just like, somebody get this guy, and like a random guy who's, I assume, one of the executives, stands up and tries to shoot him.
Well, he doesn't try. He successfully shoots
him.
Oh,
right. And then Michael Ironside rips his jaw open.
Yeah,
he does. Again, no one's shocked.
They're a little shocked at that point.
Right.
Because he sits down next to McGinley and is like, right. So you're going to help me find the Highlander. It's like, okay, you found him. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
Then Connery shows up.
Right. It was at this point in watching the movie that I refused to believe that it was only 90 minutes. Because I was just like, this has surely been 2.5 hours, right?
Yeah.
This movie...
This is the longest 100 minutes.
Yeah.
So...
they infiltrate the corporation by pretending to get shot and killed.
Well, they don't pretend to get shot.
Okay. They pretend to get shot in a way that would kill them.
They don't pretend.
They get shot. I'm just saying they pretend to get shot in the way that we all get shot, which is that you are then killed.
They play dead. Yeah, they drive their car in there and get riddled with bullets and pretend to be dead.
That's an easier way of saying the thing I said, sure.
It's like, oh, they get shot.
Yeah, they sneak to...
It's an extended sequence of squibs exploding all over their entire bodies.
Right. Sean Connery, they almost get Willy Wonka'd by a fan. Sean Connery self-destructs?
Yep.
Is that what I saw happen?
Pretty much. Like he gives us some line about like summoning all of your life energy into one moment and then does magic.
He blows up like the Death Star.
And then explodes.
Yeah. And
in like a fireball.
Yeah, and I'm not entirely sure what was happening in any of that. Because he's like, this will help you go, like, get away. But it seemed like they could leave no matter what.
Well, he used his magic to, like, open the door, and the fan was still up there. It's like, Sean, it seems like you can leave. Like, you've got a few seconds, man.
But he just stays there and explodes.
In a fireball.
Yeah.
We the fucking Terminator? Like, what is this?
I don't know.
So they find, as they're running in the tunnel, they find his old Connor's old partner who built the shield with them, who tells them, no, the shield really is unnecessary. Here are the coordinates to go turn it off. So they leave and drive out there, and Michael Ironside tries to intercept them on the truck. Like the Terminator, he punches his way through the windshield, but gets thrown off. And then they get to the shield coordinates to deactivate it, and they have one more sword fight that it ends very abruptly.
Like, sure does.
Like, it's kind of short, and like it's like, yeah, it for being the last battle with the bad guy, like when Michael Ironside gets his head chopped off, I was like, really? That's
Hold
it?
Hold on. You skipped over the part where Michael Ironside crushes John C. McGinley's testicles and throws him out a window, and he goes flying down the window like a dummy and crashes into, I think, a car.
He lands on like a train track.
Sure something that happened.
He uppercuts John C. McGinley in the balls, crushes them like torturously slow and loudly, and then fucking throws him headfirst out a window. It is breathtaking.
It is incredible. What a scene. That's what I wrote. I think this might be the best film ever. It was a real ups and downs watching this movie.
It's peaks and valleys.
Yeah, for sure. So they briefly go through the mountains and they see, yeah, that in fact the air is breathable. And then what? They shut down the shield and everybody's happy?
Yeah, they turn it off. Shield goes away. They look up at the stars and smile, and I guess they're a couple now, and then the movie ends.
Yep.
Now, apparently in some cuts, they teleport away to Zeist for some reason.
Yes,
like, why the fuck would he go back to
there's
Zeist?
There's a version where they turn into, like, pure light, and that's the end, and it's like, huh. All right.
Boy, you guys just didn't have a coherent idea about this film, did you?
Yeah. Like, well, we'll get into that. Before we get into Howlander. In the Wylander, I do want to try to take a guess at, because I couldn't find this in Howlander, of why this film is what it is.
I don't know. Like, nothing I found on Wikipedia. Like, it said there
I have
was
a solid
some
guess.
Okay.
So, a few scenes stick out to me. The airplane scene with the plane crash, the psychic, the was it psychic cook?
Psychic chef, yeah.
Psychic chef. Mm-hmm. The corporation, the dome, and the ending of giving everybody air. I want to point out that
Total Recall
came out a year earlier, directed by Paul Verhoeven, who also did RoboCop. Which I would also argue there's a little bit of RoboCop in this.
There's a little bit of RoboCop in it for sure.
And I think that's what they were doing. I think they thought they were making something satirical. I think the idea, and I had never considered this before, because I don't think I've ever seen it, is that we have, you know, these days, you know, The Dark Knight came out and everybody was trying to be gritty from then on. Mm-hmm. I think Paul Verhoeven was copied during this time, and the result is shit like this, where it's like they think they're being funny and kind of weird, like kind of random, like but fun. Like they were trying to make a Paul Verhoeven film.
That's weird.
But doesn't that make sense when you look
kinda
at the movie?
Yeah,
like it's tongue in cheek enough. And it keeps adding these weird random things like the plane, like that plane video. I think they thought they were being satirical. Same with the psychic chef where they're like, it's the future. It's like Running Man and stuff like that, where it's, mm-hmm. I think that's what they were trying to make is like one of those, like this. I don't think this is that far away from movies like that, that we hold dear. It just wasn't well written and didn't really have a direction.
Yeah. And it also, It very strangely takes, you know, it pivots away from pure like fantasy, like the first one was, yeah, into science fiction.
Yeah, it's tonally, it's completely fucking wrong.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that I think that's my best guess.
I mean, that sounds like that might be what happened. Yeah.
Yeah. You want to get into Howlander? Because this
I would love to get into Howlander because this movie is blowing my mind.
Yeah. because there's more to this.
Okay.
I watched the documentary Seduced by Argentina. They put the blame squarely on Argentina and Europe in general. Apparently,
go on.
The documentary begins with them pointing out that while Fox Studios did not, as the director talks about the American posters for this film, which was just a close-up of Christopher Lambert's face, and he says that, quote, he looks like a serial rapist. and so they basically, they didn't think Fox cared about this movie, the first Highlander, and they didn't think that they advertised it well. And then they compared it to when they went to Paris, and the premiere there was huge, and they had these beautiful posters, and they were rolling out that red carpet. And they said that every time they go to like European film festivals, people would be like, are you going to make a Highlander 2? So this was the this is where the Seduced by Argentina title comes from. Basically, okay. Europe was like, you should do a Highlander 2. And they were like, okay, I mean, we didn't plan to, but we can whip something up. And then they got Argentina was a third of the cost of just Europe. So they went to Argentina, despite the fact that Argentina was still at war with Europe, and the economy was crashing. They described them as having the remnants of a film industry, and they ended up having to truck in and fly in crew and equipment, and basically they had to bring the whole production there. So
all of that comes through on the screen. Let me tell you,
all they were getting was the location. On top of that, because they were at war with Europe, the British crew and the Argentinian crew had problems working together.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they described at lunch they were like started by playfully throwing bread at each other, and then that escalated to bottles. Every payday, guards came with submachine guns with envelopes of cash because they couldn't deal with anything but cash, American cash.
Sure, when your economy is in a nosedive due to a war.
Yep. Yes. Apparently, because of they blamed Argentina for this, the crew and the culture there, everybody would get shit faced by lunch, so they had to get all the work done in the morning. At one point, I think the cinematographer describes the scaffolding that was brought in was from other countries secondhand. The AD fell 30 feet from one of the scaffoldings at one point.
Jesus Christ!
Because they were using shoddy equipment. And finally, the producers and the European like producers and stuff, they insisted that Sean Connery be a major role and not just a cameo. So they ended up paying Sean Connery $3 million for 6 days of work to be in this.
I'm telling you, all of this comes through on the screen.
Yes. That said, you know what I didn't mention there was the decision to write the film they wrote. Because none of that excuses that. This documentary is them throwing Argentina under the bus. And at one point they get to the alien thing. And the screenwriter says, oh yeah, a lot of ideas were thrown around. They kind of throw Brian Clemens under the bus. They sort of say like, yeah, we were listening to Brian Clemens a lot. And he suggested, there's four credited writers and he's one of them. Lambert says, he says they on set, they were laughing about how the alien thing was put in. They thought it was hilarious and dumb. And the quote I got from him, by the way, his interview in this documentary, you got to watch it, Tom. He's wearing a giant anarchy shirt for some reason.
Because he's fucking hardcore.
Yeah. But he,
I read that he threatened to walk off the film, but he was like bound by his contract.
Yeah, the director walked out of the premiere.
Well, they bounced him out of the movie, right?
Oh, is that it? That's amazing.
That's what I heard.
Lambert said, the quote I have is for the alien thing. His explanation was, we were cornered, and the more we were cornered, the more stupid things we had to come up with. Which, I don't believe that completely, because again, I don't think they were on set. Because in order to make the aliens, they had to create more to do.
Yes.
So it wasn't a cutting corner solution. There's a couple of the producers, I have a quote where they said, where they were talking about the origin of the immortals, and they said it probably wasn't a question we should have answered, and maybe we didn't do it in a great way. So that's what it is that it's not.
I can I can believe that they might have been pressured to put in a sci-fi element because, as you pointed out, like Total Recall had just come out and that was a huge hit.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, let's give it a sci-fi spin because fantasy never sells.
I think they were pressured by themselves. I don't think Argentina had anything to do with it.
No, Argentina definitely didn't do it. What the fuck would a country care what you put in your movie?
I think it came down with the writer did not go in the right direction. I get the instinct because all right. They're saying that Europe pressured them due to their popularity to making another. So that's probably your first problem, is that if you don't have an idea, if your main character, the story is done in the first movie, because the screenwriter says that too. He's like, you know, it's a hindsight thing. If I had known, I would have written something in the first one to keep it open, but I didn't. He admits that.
But it's good that you didn't.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily always need to leave things open for a sequel. That movie is pretty self-contained.
Yeah. This documentary is very much like the Batman and Robin documentary without the humility as much. Like the Batman and Robin documentary, it's Schumacher being like, look, guys, I fucked up. I'm sorry.
He puts blame where it's appropriate. But right. Schumacher takes that bullet.
Yeah. I also learned they built for that action sequence for the Porcupine Twins. That was a mile long set. They realized
there's a train on it.
Yeah. Well, here was the thing is that they needed a train and they were like, should we build that? And they didn't. They found like old railroad tracks and they built the set around it. Apparently that was a bad idea. There's a lot of these little moments in the documentary where he adds like, yeah, we decided to do that, you know, after having a glass of wine or two at lunch. And it's like, what do you mean by that? Are you trying to say like, yeah, we were pretty shit faced when we made these ideas. So
are you telling me?
Out,
so your explanation is that you're telling me you as the director and producer and filmmaker, the person in charge of the set, decided to subject your cast and crew to a moving train after you got hammered at lunch?
Yeah, that's it.
Like, that's your explanation?
A lot of drinking on the set of this, it appears.
Oh, I don't doubt that. Yeah.
But again, none of that makes up for the... Someone had to sit down and write this.
Like, this movie is there are problems like at the fundamental DNA level of this film.
Yeah, like blaming the production...
Like the production, okay, but that, like you said, none of that explains why they're aliens.
I would even argue that the movie doesn't look half bad. I mean, it has problems, a lot of problems, but like it doesn't, when you watch this movie, it's more that the reason this movie doesn't work never really had anything to do with the production side in my head. No. I wasn't watching and being like, that camera shot doesn't make sense, or the editing is shitty, or like, oh, it looks like they forgot to film a scene. It's not that. It just seems like someone wrote a really bad idea.
Yeah, this is a bad story, and it's particularly baffling as a Highlander sequel.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, so he's a scientist in the future that built a dome to protect the Earth from UV rays?
Yeah. Why is he a scientist?
Why is he a scientist?
Another bit of information. Lambert wanted real swords while filming. This resulted in him chipping one of Michael Ironside's teeth.
And Michael Ironside chops off the tip of one of his fingers.
Sure did.
I read that.
Lambert lost part of his finger making this movie.
Couldn't be more delighted. I mean, if you're... What do you think's going to happen if you hand Michael Ironside a 22-pound broadsword? Uh-huh. Somebody's losing a finger.
No, somebody, and it's probably not Michael Ironside. This movie.
Michael Ironside doesn't look like he wouldn't cut your finger off.
Yeah. No, he looks the opposite. Opposite of that.
Yeah, no, in point of fact, it looks like his character moved in the opposite direction.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's what this is. I think it's a screenwriter watched Total Recall and was like, everybody loves this Verhoeven stuff.
Yeah, it's for some reason they decided to make a Highlander sequel as a science fiction futuristic
comedy.
It's very strange.
Yeah. And so he wrote this up. They went to Argentina. Things didn't go great there either. So yeah, there probably was a lot of problems while filming. Nobody was into it. The performances aren't as good. It just made a real stinker.
Just made a real terrible movie.
But the result is a film that is really hard to figure out why it exists. or how it happened. It is amazing.
So many bold decisions. Yeah,
I would tell people to watch this, but I don't know how.
Yeah, it's not worth the work it takes to track this down.
Go to your local library and find it.
Maybe they have it at the library. That's
go into the haunted basement of your library. Look through some old boxes, and you'll probably find Highlander 2.
Yeah,
just somewhere in there.
It's if you don't find it down there, it's probably buried out back.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, this is a film.
Just go out back with a metal detector. When your metal detector explodes, right, that's where you dig.
This film is going extinct.
Yes.
And that makes me sad. It reminds me of Super Mario Brothers, another film that's sort of going extinct. You can't really watch it online. Some movies are more deserving of others. I would also say True Lies is going extinct. But that should not go extinct.
That's because Cameron's a butt.
Yeah.
He has to personally oversee every transfer. So it's, I don't think
there's
the Abyss
rumors
is on Blu-ray yet.
Finally.
Isn't that correct? The Abyss is not yet on Blu-ray?
The Abyss and True Lies are the two that are
the
like, come on.
What the fuck are you doing, man?
Yeah. Jesus Christ. But at least you can watch those online usually. Highlander 2 should not go extinct either. No movie should go extinct.
I don't think any movie should, yeah.
But this especially... I don't know. I think if a movie's like super racist or like doesn't have, you know, where it's like this isn't helping and this is just boring.
Even then, I think you should keep that shit like in a museum or something,
right?
Like archived
right.
somewhere, because it's. I think it's important to see.
Well, it's like the Disney Song of the South, where they were like, they struggled for years, like, should we release this? And like, I think they finally did release a copy with like a black history professor doing an intro.
I think you can get it in Europe, I think. Not,
yeah.
They do not sell that in America.
Yeah, because again, it's historically significant.
Exactly,
I more mean,
yes.
I'm trying to think of a good movie to say, like, because I think there are a few movies that I'm just like, I don't need this movie to ever continue.
Birth of a Nation.
Yeah, Birth of the Nation is one where it's like, yeah.
But even then, I think Birth of a Nation
is important too.
For historical
no,
context.
No, right, I'm saying yeah. more like Rob Schneider's The Animal, where it's like, it probably has some racist impressions. It doesn't really do anything for any... Like, if that movie went extinct, I'm not... Again, I don't think any movie should go extinct.
No, I don't.
But
it's a shame.
It's like that scene in... This is going to be weird. It's like that scene in The Day After Tomorrow where they have to burn the books and they're choosing what to burn. Like, if I had to do that with DVDs, like, The Animal would be the first one. That'd be like, yeah,
yeah,
I'm burning
for
that
sure.
for warmth.
This is neither here nor there, but I just edited an interview with Roland Emmerich, and I kind of like Roland Emmerich. He seems like a chill dude.
Yeah. I mean,
he seems like
movies.
A cool dude.
I like all of his movies,
and
like every single one of his movies.
And like personally, like he's a really socially conscious dude. I'm like, yeah. All right, Roland Emmerich, okay.
It's probably
anyway.
Why. Well, no, it's that thing of like, why do they keep making movies? It's probably because they're a nice person.
And he also has several big hits under his belt.
Right. That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
Fucking Highlander 2.
Yeah. Fucking Highlander 2. It's this. What an oddity.
If you can see this movie, I think you should. This is a good getting together with friends movie, I think.
Yeah.
Because
you
could talk amongst yourself and then every now and then stop and go, did he just grab John C. McGinley's balls and throw him out a window? Hold on, everybody. Let's rewind that and see what just happened.
Not only does he grab John C. McGinley's balls, he crushes them in his fist.
Yeah. Because I had moments like that where I would drift away from the screen. And then I look back and they're flying around like a train.
Like, wait a minute, what's
hold
happening?
On. Yeah. hold on a second. Let me go back and confirm that what I'm seeing is actually happening.
Yeah, oh man. I suspect it may come... Something tells me, like, with how many fights there have been over the different cuts of this film, and the fact that, like, you know, it's on a separate DVD and that collection that you got... And I know they did it like within the last year on How Did This Get Made, so it must have been available on a streaming service before then.
That's true.
I feel like this movie probably has a lot of legal battles going on over who
yes.
owns it.
100%.
Its release, like everybody about this, as I can definitely tell from what you've told me of the documentary and what I read online. This movie just made everybody bitter and resentful of everyone else that worked on it. So,
the making of it is is the making of is a defense. It's like or a defense and like an attack. It's that. It's like you feel like nobody needed a making of documentary for Highlander 2.
I disagree.
Okay, I don't remember think when remember they the made
first,
it.
The first text I sent you after I finished it, I was like, I have never needed to know everything right. about how a movie got made more than I do for this movie.
That's true. And I got to say big props for them for doing that, for being like, I love it when a making of documentary is the filmmakers being like, okay, so this didn't work out. Now let's sit and talk about why that is.
Yeah, we mentioned the Batman and Robin doc. That's right. It's like that's the reason to buy that DVD is for that documentary. And then also, of course, Lost Soul.
Yeah, Lost Soul. There's a few others, but I'll have to Google them because I remember there being some good ones where they just talk about like, yeah, okay, this movie sucked. Let's talk it out. I appreciate that. I appreciate no, like, I mean, it's really just that while even while they were making it, they're like, so this is going to suck, huh? Like, nobody, this isn't precious to anybody. Even the screenwriters in the documentary being like, yeah, so the movie sucks. And it's like, you wrote it. You're the one person I think would defend it more than anybody else. But even he's just like, yeah, we didn't really know what to do. So we just.
Yeah. Dude, I don't know. I was snowblind on yeah. coke in a yeah, hotel exactly. room in Argentina when I wrote this thing. I don't even fucking remember.
Yeah. But the making of definitely feels like it's like a defense. It's like they're responding to something that happened to them. Like the idea that on the street, people would just scream at them and throw things at them and scream Highlander 2 sucks. I definitely got that impression from the Schumacher Batman and Robin where it's like, it's clearly come up a lot. And so he was like,
yeah,
like, hey everybody, I'm sorry. All right. You can stop telling me your
well,
thoughts
then you
on
had,
this.
You know, that famous bit that Clooney would do if he would give you your money back. If you told
oh,
him
yeah.
you saw Batman and Robin on the street, he's like, yeah. I will give you your ticket money back.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I don't imagine I'll ever run into Christopher Lambert on the street, and I wouldn't recognize the director Russell Mulcahy if I couldn't yeah. pick him out of a lineup. So,
what's Lambert up to? He did Ghost Rider
he's in,
too.
He's in
Spirit
something.
Spirit of Vengeance.
I feel like he was just in something. Like he God, he works
he
pretty
gets,
steadily.
When fucking Lord Raiden gets hit by a beer bottle by a lady in a bar, it's just. Because it's like, dude, you're the Highlander. You should see that coming.
Well, he's not Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like, he's an old guy now. He's
yeah,
like a fair. Regular
that's
mortal.
Fair. That's
oh,
fair.
God. You're seeing Lord Raiden get attacked by a woman just, in a bar.
It was just so, it's the beer bottle in bar sitting where it's like.
It's like a big, it's like a liter bottle, too.
Yeah.
It's a big bottle.
It's such an undignified way to get attacked.
Yeah. Just this fucking old guy at a bar.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. This film, you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, don't fucking go out of your way, I guess, to watch it. But also, kind of watch it if you can. Just don't be mad after you watch it at me
yeah.
for telling you to watch it.
I feel like if you're a Highlander fan, you probably skip this movie anyway.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't, like, they don't, in the series and in the other films, I'm reasonably certain they don't. Make the alien stuff canon because that's dumb. Like, that's real dumb.
So dumb.
We didn't need an explanation no. for why this is. It's magic. Okay, that's fine. I'm yep. fine with it being magic.
Yep. No, they felt the need to explain it.
Them being exiled aliens makes less sense than magic.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good God.
I think that's the end of this installment of yeah. Princess of the Universe.
I think so too. Guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks to James Rainey for making yes. it all happen.
Thank you, James Rainey. Sorry for the delay. This was a difficult film to get.
Oh yeah, we sort of talked about that. That's why this took a little bit. Hopefully, yeah. The rest I think are available.
The rest are pretty readily available.
All right, yeah. This one it was just a little delay because yeah, I think I still have a VHS of this coming in the mail, and I think it's going to be the theatrical version. So ooh. I might watch that on my own time.
Do you have a VHS player?
No, I would have to get one.
I do. I have one.
Okay, we'll make a night of it. Yeah,
we can make this shit happen. We're gonna get together and watch Highlander 2: The Quickening on VHS.
Yep, the way it was meant to be seen.
That's how I saw it. I saw it at my dad's house. He rented it from Video Express.
Nice. I hope it's a full screen version. It better be a full screen. What I get?
Oh, it's gonna be pan and scan all the way, bro.
Yeah. Oh,
you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Perfect.
VHS from 1991. That shit is pan and scan.
Yeah, very, very good point. remember when there was like an option where you could get DVDs and you could accidentally get the full screen version?
Yep.
What a weird time where we had this, like, we had to change the shape of TVs. Like, that's wild.
Oh, it's interesting that people became just like everyone sort of became like low level cinephiles after the release of DVD, because getting widescreen movies was a thing you had to track down, and it would more often than not piss people off because they'd be like, I can't see the whole movie, even though you are seeing the whole movie.
Yeah,
that's the point.
I know. I remember that struggle, and then we had to physically change TVs.
Yeah,
and then people were like, I get it.
Yeah, once people realized that, like, oh no, wait, I'm seeing the whole movie. I wasn't before.
Yeah.
So then they made the TVs a different shape to compensate, and here we are.
Which
now
is
everything
weird because
is in widescreen. Now they're making old TV shows widescreen.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember my film history, because I think what happened was full screen on TV was a response to film. Like, I think film was always somewhat widescreen. Yeah, and then TV was like, I don't know. It was a weird
little bit. I think older films, they're not
older.
I mean,
films
not...
got more square. Yeah, started. I don't know. I remember the this is the worst podcasting. I remember the explanation between that, the sort of conflict between the two being different than I thought it was, and kind of interesting. And now I don't know what it is. So now I'm just saying that it's interesting.
Oh. Maybe I feel like this is like an Abe or a Ganser question.
Yeah, I could Google it, but then you just have to hear me Googling something quietly.
It's not important. It's not important.
No, none of this is important.
None of this is important. Should we wrap this up?
Yeah, we already did.
Oh yeah, well, tell them what we got going on,
guys.
You guys, Patreon.
This is from one of our Patreon subscribers. Is the reason this exists. If you're interested in checking out our Patreon, you go to patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. We have exclusive podcasts like Tom and Jeff Watch Batman and Fox Mulder is a Maniac.
Sing it.
Yeah, there's you can watch movies with us every Friday. There's different tier levels. There's going to be some new ones coming up. We got some open, like, if you want to produce your own podcast series with us, that tier is open up right now.
They go pretty quick.
So check it out, guys.
We also have a store, tpublic.com/store/gamefullyunemployed. We can get cool t-shirts and stickers and a really awesome Mulder poster that Starlene Hodge drew for us. And she's also working on a new t-shirt. It's a Where's Bane shirt for you, anyone who's a Tom and Jeff Watch Batman fan. Yes, Sassy Ben Mendelsohn. Where's Bane?
I've seen the t-shirt design and it is
It
lovely.
Looks so good.
Yeah. It's great, great image of Bane in that.
Solid Bane.
Yeah.
Should
we make a... Should we do a t-shirt for this? Should we do Christopher Lambert just fucking a lady in an alley? Is that a t-shirt? No, I'm going to answer that.
No, we shouldn't do that. We should do a Princess of the Universe shirt. We should do some kind of Highlander shirt.
All right. Stay tuned, guys, for the Highlander shirt we just came up with.
All right.
All right.
Bye, Lander.
Bye, Lander.